A Sapphire Running Zone podcast.
Hi everyone, this is Tim from the Sapphire Running Zone. This podcast, we are very pleased to welcome Leslie McGinty from the Scoliosis Support and Research Charity. And Leslie is a very experienced practitioner in the fundraising world. And on this podcast, we're going to look at some best practice when it comes to how to raise money for your favorite charity. Leslie's going to talk us through some of her experiences. So Leslie, first up, introduce yourself and tell us all the history of your fundraising days.
All the history of my fundraising game. Well, as Tim says, I'm Leslie McGinty. I'm now the chief executive of Scoliosis Support and Research, but I'm quite a rare breed in that I'm a chief exec who has come from a fundraising background rather than an operational background. I've actually been in fundraising now for nearly 30 years, which is quite frightening. Basically being a community fundraiser, that's where my loyalties lie, looking after people who obviously in the community who want to do things, and it becomes a very personal relationship. I've worked for large charities, small charities, medical charities, military charities, all sorts, and to come now to Scoliosis Support and Research, which is a small charity but has a big reach, is really a privilege.
Tell us all about the work you did at the prostate cancer charity.
At the prostate cancer charity, I came in at a time when they had a limited number of marathon places, and we worked with Tim's company to increase the number of runners, both for the guaranteed places and for the own place ballot runners. We more than trebled the income just from the marathon. We got involved with other events like the Great North Run, the World Marathon Majors. We had people going into international marathons. It was a significant, the running income was a significant part of the community fundraising.
And you've got aspirations to do the same thing where you are now?
Yes, I would like to, although Scoliosis Support and Research is smaller now than prostate was at the time, I'd like to replicate the model and start at the beginning and increase our body of runners, whether it's going into places that we buy, whether it's people that do their own thing. We need to hugely increase the amount of runners we have, because not only does it generate income, obviously, for the charity, it generates awareness for the condition of scoliosis, which is not as rare as people realise.
And what is the situation with the condition in the UK population?
In the UK population, it's recorded as being in the region of 3%, which, if you put that into a number, is nearly 2 million people. But actually, very up-to-date research that is being funded by our charity is showing that the prevalence is probably considerably higher. But I wouldn't want to put a figure on that because it's research still ongoing.
Yeah, those are pretty big numbers, aren't they? And if you look at that in terms of the total market, if we can call it that, there's a lot of potential runners out there with the condition or know people with the condition. They obviously are your starting point.
I think they're obviously our starting point. And we find that, exactly as you say, we have some people coming to us who want to run because somebody they know has scoliosis. But what's very, very inspiring is the fact that so many people with scoliosis themselves are prepared to run, to take part in a running challenge for us. And we basically want to open the world of running to everybody, not just for people affected by scoliosis, but to the wider world, so that they start to know about scoliosis.
Yeah, because that obviously helps massively with the awareness, doesn't it? Which is clearly a really important role for you guys. How do you begin to talk to people without a relationship with scoliosis? Because that's obviously so that's a huge market, but obviously a highly competitive one, because every other charity is also trying to talk to that market. How do you do that?
The honest answer is, at the moment with scoliosis support and research, we haven't. But in past roles that I've been involved in, depending on budget, you can advertise, obviously. You can get listings on running-related websites. There are many ways that you can start to approach people who may not realise that we exist. And it's surprising how many people, when you say to them about scoliosis, they go, oh, my cousin had that. So we have to put ourselves out into the wider world rather than simply preaching to the converted all the time.
Your experiences in the fundraising sector, you've seen the growth of online platforms, the importance of social media. Being able to talk to runners is a lot easier now, but it's also very congested.
Yeah.
The first thing, clearly, when you do attract a runner is getting that fundraising page set up. What, just talk me through some great examples of people that have set a page up and ended up raising significant amounts of money, even though they didn't necessarily expect to in the short term. What, you see, if you're running on a London Marathon entry or one of the majors, you're going to have to raise £2,000 or whatever the number is. People who are running on their own entries in smaller events may only have an aspiration of raising 200, but sometimes they go on and raise big numbers, don't they?
I think that's a really good point, because I think whatever you're doing, whether it's a big marathon or a local 10K, because people that are doing something like a 10K may have never run an inch in their life, and it's just as much of a challenge to them as to run a marathon. We don't distinguish between them. We give the same support to whoever's doing what. The first thing, obviously, we would encourage them to set up their online fundraising page. And as you said earlier, because of the use of social media, it's much easier than it was even 10 years ago to circulate your fundraising page, to promote what you're doing on your own social media. We always ask people for their inspiring stories and we put them on our social media. And I think getting out to a wider audience is much, much easier now. And some of our particularly inspiring fundraisers, particularly around the marathon, have done just that. They've really used social media well. They've put little videos of themselves. They've got onto everything. Whereas before, people used to say, put your Just Giving link on your email signature. Now you're getting it out to thousands and thousands of people by putting it on your own social media, your family's social media, our social media. You can reach people that you would never have been able to reach a few years ago.
Yeah, I think the what we've seen with your 2024 London Marathon team has been inspiring on a number of fronts. One of them is the fact that some of these guys have had surgery and could barely walk a few years ago, and they're now running 26 miles through the capital and putting themselves through more pain is amazing. But the way that they have generated support is also very impressive. And the fact that you've got this Facebook community has made a real difference, because here you've got a group of people who are impacted by the condition, may not necessarily be doing a challenge to fundraise, but are happy to support other people who are doing that. That's really important, isn't it?
I think very much so, because I think there's always an element of people who want to do something, but for whatever reason can't. And because we have a very large body of people on our Facebook support group, people recognise the challenge that people are doing and they think, gosh, I can't do that, but I'll put money in for someone who does. And I think being part of that community on both sides, not only the people who are doing the fundraising feeling part of a community, but the greater community feeling involved with people who are doing challenges, is very valuable. And I think as a small charity, that's something that we work really hard on, is fostering that sense of community.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is one way that you can help a runner go from potentially £200 running a local half marathon with their own entry to, say, £400. Is there a limit on the access that you give those runners to that Facebook group, because obviously you don't want to inundate the group, and obviously you've got plans to grow the number of runners. How do you limit that?
Just to temper that, our Facebook group is very much a support group. It's a sort of safe space for people that are affected by scoliosis. It's not an advertising platform in any way, shape or form. However, when someone's doing something significant, we ask them to post on it. It's a private group. It's not a group that, it's not open to the everybody, although we do have a generic Facebook page, which is, and if we had a particularly inspiring story, we would put it on the general Facebook. But the message remains the same, really, that people can get out to a much bigger audience through whatever social media, whether it's their own or ours.
Yeah, so the key for you guys then is growing the number of runners with their own entry in an event, because you've got a limited number of London Marathon entries, which are fantastic, and the runners on those raise a lot of money. But there's only a limited number, and you want to grow the number of runners that are supporting the charity. How do you go about doing that? How do you encourage more and more runners to support you, whether it be £100 or £200, and get them to raise more? But how do you get more of those? Is it a case then of targeting your database first and using your social media?
Yes. I mean, obviously, you're going to go for the captive audience first. And we would maybe do an email promotion, for want of a better word, to all our membership, and just say, do you or someone you know want to be involved in taking on a running challenge for us? The social media groups, as I was just saying earlier, we have a huge amount of people involved in that. And we have two phrases. Basically, whatever you do, do it for us. And secondly, our runners who decide what they want to do, we call them random runners, because they could be anybody, and they could be doing any race, however big, however small. And we're always on the end of a phone or an email to give them that support. We send out a fundraising pack, to give people lots of ideas, which obviously doesn't apply just necessarily to runners, but we have lots of hints and tips. We encourage people to get their online fundraising page set up straight away. We encourage them to get circulating that page straight away. We're working with Sapphire Running Zone to offer more value to the people who run for us, so that they have extra support that we wouldn't be able to provide by ourselves, such as training plans for the bigger races, nutrition advice, access to podcasts of other people who are doing the same thing. But we pride ourselves on our personal approach, and that we look after all our runners and all our fundraisers on a very personal level.
Yeah, and that is so important, because the runner is committing a lot of their time to doing this, and whilst they don't always want a massive pat on the back, it's just nice to know that there's somebody there that's on the end of a phone or on the end of an email that can actually answer any questions they might have. But for a lot of people, this is the first time they will have done something like this. And it's easy to take it for granted when you've done a few races, but it is a big deal for people. Now, I know Leslie and I have had lots of lively discussions about virtual events, which is something that is an ongoing discussion. But this is an avenue for people who don't want to enter an event. And a lot of people don't. They don't want to travel too far or run in a crowd. This is another avenue. And they maybe don't want to do the distance in one go. They want to spread it over a month or 2 months. But these guys can be really good fundraisers. So another avenue, Leslie, that we'll talk about, but you can see the potential of talking to people about doing stuff around where they live.
Absolutely. And I think, much as I don't like to admit it, I'm coming round to the idea of virtual events, because I do, obviously, I'm being facetious, but I see the value in people who may not be able to travel to a particular event. They may have childcare commitments or anything, but they can still take part in the Timbuktu half marathon virtually, and they don't have to do it all in the same day. They can take 3 weeks to do it, so long as they can prove that they've done it. And there are plenty of apps nowadays that show your route and show what you've done. So I'm happy to say that I'm much more open to considering virtual events, and I think it's something we haven't done before, and I think we should try it.
Yeah, and I think there's also a lot of people that have, you know, severe anxiety issues about being in a crowd, and it just gives someone that extra avenue if they just want to stay at home and just do it around the block, mile a day. There's some great stories out there of people that have been inspired, but during the time, we all know this came about as a result of the COVID era. They did exist beforehand, but as we all know, virtual events were just around every corner when COVID hit. And there is a legacy there. I think they're also quite useful during your training. If you were training for a physical event and you wanted some kind of recognition once you've done your first half marathon in training or something, there's ways of using them, and importantly, as part of a fundraising program. So watch this space, guys. There may well be something out there.
I think I would also like to add, now that I'm becoming slightly converted to the virtual events thing, is that virtual events, that there may be a person fundraising, but their family can also get involved. They can take the dog. They just want to trot around the park and clock up 3 miles towards their half marathon. You can take the dog, you can take the kids, you can push a baby in a pushchair. And I think it opens up the opportunities for people to be able to be involved at their level. And as you say, some people are very anxious about crowds, and it just opens the field, literally.
Yeah, and they're super flexible, and I think that's the benefit. Yeah. What are your thoughts on incentives for fundraising? Obviously, in the ideal world, and we don't live in it, in the ideal world, you would be inundated with hundreds of runners who came to you and said, I'm going to raise £500 from my local 5K. That isn't what's going to happen. However, there will be a lot of people out there who will do it, but they might need a little bit of a push. What are your thoughts on offering runners some kind of incentive to join the charity?
I think it's something we need to consider in this day and age, because, as you say, it's a very crowded market. A lot of charities are chasing basically the same people to do running. And I think incentives, I'm not against. I think there are various levels of it. It could be simply like offering access to training plans and nutrition advice or something. We obviously, anyone who runs for us, we give them a running vest and a t-shirt, and that's enough for some people. But I think there are things like, I think financial constraints are a problem now, and people might not be able to pay an entry fee for an event, but they still want to run for us. So there may be something around, once they've started their fundraising, we can refund their entry fee or something like that. I think there are different levels of incentive, and I think it's something we need to investigate, particularly if we want to attract people that aren't naturally affiliated to the scoliosis cause.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've used the word flexible already, and I think that's the key here, isn't it? It's so important to get as many runners into your team as you can, but they might all come slightly differently.
Yeah.
People's motivations are very different, and it may be that somebody's attracted by an incentive and somebody else isn't. They'll just want to do it for a relationship reason. So I think flexibility is really important, but looking after your runner is clearly a top priority, which you guys are all over. And you know, the feedback we've had from the runners that you've currently got is really good. Yeah, the hope is that word of mouth happens, and a lot of those guys will then recommend the charity to their friends, and that's how it grows. And we've seen that in the past, haven't we?
Yeah, definitely.
Teams going from small to quite significant quite quickly because of that word of mouth support.
And it's that awareness. It's that simple. It's the fact that people know who we are. They know what scoliosis is. and they know that they can come to us.
Yeah, we've done lots of fundraising between us over the years, and we've seen some real success stories and some not so successful. We've seen runners raise huge amounts of money. We've talked about social media being obviously way more important than it was a few years ago. Events are one of my favourite ways of fundraising, and we've seen some fantastic examples. Social media now makes that easier as well, but there are some basic approaches, aren't there, to raising money. The classic bake sale, which is an old favourite. And I was talking to a colleague in the US last week, and she had a runner who combined a bake sale with her runs. Yeah. And she did a bake sale and then delivered the products on her runs, which is a great way of doing it. I've heard the famous car wash situation. That's always an old favourite. Have you got any examples from over the last few years of people that have put on events and raised significant money?
We have a huge assortment of people doing all sorts of weird and wonderful things. Our fundraising pack that we give to everybody who fundraises, not just runners, has an A to Z of ideas of how people can raise money. But we've had a young girl doing a drumathon for 24 hours. We've got a gentleman who's had surgery doing a boxing match. It's staggering, the variety of things that people do, not just to raise money for example, a minimum for the marathon, just for all sorts of fundraising. I think there are a lot of opportunities, and I think people are getting more innovative than just having a bake sale or a pub quiz or something. People are really starting to think about it. And again, that's where the use of social media is coming in. They're doing TikTok videos. They're doing different things just to get the word out and to ask for money, because that's what fundraising is. But the traditional ways are starting to become almost dated. They're perfectly valid, but people, what we're seeing is a real innovation of people thinking of different ways to raise money alongside the traditional bake sales, quizzes, all manner of things. So I think there's a lot of new thinking coming into fundraising.
Yeah, I had a guy the other day who managed to source some vouchers for pub meals, and then he auctioned them on his Facebook group.
Exactly.
Great thing. He's not had to organise the event. Mm. He's basically gone to the pub, got some vouchers, and then raffled them off, auctioned them off. And that's just a fantastic way of doing it, if you've got the social media and, you know, the social network, which is clearly important. Absolutely. But just going around, you know, some of the old stuff is still good stuff. But you can now put a twist on it. So if you do a car wash, brilliant, but you could probably arrange car washes online and then go out to specific houses once you've got some bookings.
Do it.
You've got to spend the time thinking about it, because one of the things that we've talked to a lot of other people about is allowing yourself time to fundraise.
Yes.
Do not treat this as something you do once you're three quarters of the way through your training. You have to do it at the start, and you will have had, I'm sure, lots of lively conversations with runners who haven't quite hit their fundraising targets because they left it too late.
I think one of the things that we definitely do, and we do it well, is as soon as someone approaches us to say what they're doing, we go, that's great. You're sitting in a bath of beans, you're having a boxing match, you're running up and down a mountain somewhere, or you're cycling somewhere. The first thing we do is say, get a fundraising page set up. And not only get a fundraising page set up, but you have to personalize it as much as possible. A lot of people just set up a page and it's just the generic text. It's really important to put your own story on it, your own picture, your own target, and make it really, really personal why you're doing it. Not just, I'm running for scoliosis, say why. And I think that's where a lot of people don't maximize their fundraising, because they don't take the opportunities that are given to them and make the most of them. And as soon as you've done that page and you've made it as personal as possible, get it out to as many people as you can and keep plugging it. You know, it's not good enough to just whack it on your Facebook or your X or your Instagram once. You need to be doing it periodically right up until the day of the event and even afterwards, because a lot of money comes in after people have taken part in the event. Everyone wants to see the picture with you with your finisher's medal on. Once you've got that, you put a post out and you say, look, I've done it. More money comes in.
You should almost treat that fundraising page as a social media page, shouldn't you, Les? You should be going back and updating it and putting images of your training on it. And well, I've just hit £500 or I've just hit £750 or whatever. It's not a static page. And I think that's the mistake a lot of people make. It's a page you've got to keep revisiting the page.
Because people want to see your progress. Because if you have never run for anything other than a bus and you suddenly decide to do the marathon, it's a huge progress. And people want to know, how's your training going? From simply, I can run a mile now, to I can run 5 miles, I can run 10 miles, I can run 15, I could do a half marathon. Then I've got to 20 miles and I think, gosh, I'm actually going to finish the marathon because I can run 20 miles. People need to follow your journey. And that's people, one of the phrases that I learned over the years is people support people, obviously. But the more personal you make it, your fundraising, people will support you because they'll engage with your story. And they'll look on your social media and go, oh, Leslie said she was going to run the marathon. I wonder how she's getting on. You've got to keep pushing it, not just be generic about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right, before we go, Les, if you've got a runner who's thinking about running an event, they've just gone onto a race website, they've secured themselves an entry, it's a 10K, 10 miles from where they live, they've never fundraised before, what would you say to them?
There's two prongs to this, because obviously that person needs to decide to run for us. So how did they know about it? Secondly, if they're on an events page, what do the events people do to encourage people who have their own places to run for charities? Because there's an element of the event pages will have certain favourite charities, or they'll want people to go about it a different way. So I think there's two sides to it. If events themselves promoted people running for whatever charity they choose, that would be helpful. If that person decides to run for us, as I said earlier, we would immediately be in touch with them. We'd send them a pack. We'd say, what are you doing? When is it? As I've just said, we tell them to set up their page. How many t-shirts do you need? You know, anything that you need. And we send it to them, and then we keep a track of what they're doing.
Fantastic. You've got a very exciting few months ahead. It'll be great to see what happens. And you certainly sound like you've got the support angle covered, and that obviously is half the battle. So we will watch with interest, and we'll have another conversation in a few weeks, see how you're getting on. But thanks for your time. Really appreciate it, and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
You're welcome. Thank you too.
Thanks for listening to this Sapphire Running Zone podcast. Keep checking back, as we have lots more podcasts coming soon.